Well, it's a lot of reasons, but one, the main one is it's an offshoot of my work on the Holocaust in Ukraine. But it's pretty inextricable also to have to deal with the Soviet violence at the time. I taught a course about 20 years ago on violence in Ukraine, and this could be considered the origin of some of this. But also I was, this particular talk I'm going to give here grows out of an invitation to talk at an art exhibition. I wrote a short text called Mixed Bones about the mixture of Nazi and Soviet victims. And that was for an art exhibition by Nikita Kadan. Then he renamed the exhibition from Mixed Bones to Unnamed Exhibition. But that was the start of it, and then I developed it and developed it, and this is its third longest and most well-researched iteration of that talk. But basically, it's an offshoot of my work on the Holocaust. And of course, you know, there's the question of what is the relationship of Nazi and Soviet crimes? Are all victims the same? I want to avoid that question, and I want to just talk about, sort of in an oblique way, about the violence in such a way that it's not overwhelming. That we have 75 years of confusion about who killed whom. People do not know. Depending on the political circumstances, various actors are blamed for the perpetration, and thus the victims are defined by the actors. But to this day, we can't solve the question of mass graves that are being dug up in Ukraine, and we cannot figure out who killed these people. Well, we rely on all kinds of sources. The most important ones are actually official sources. We have reports from the Germans, from the Soviets. We have from OUN itself. Sometimes OUN, the Organization of Ukrainian Nationalists, is involved in the violence. So we have those. But perpetrator sources are problematic because they are from the view of the people who are the murderers. And sometimes we have surviving victims, and sometimes we don't have surviving victims. But where we have survivors, we have their stories, and those are, I would say, of also great importance in this. Contemporary newspaper accounts. I guess those are your main sources for this kind of topic. Well, you have to just be careful with them. I feel that the historian who works with these kind of things has to be aware that what they are using is contaminated by the criminality of that age. So if you have, for instance, Soviet documents of interrogations, and we know that those were those interrogations produced results as a result of torture, beatings, sometimes much worse than that. We have to realize what we're doing. We are using tainted information. Same with the German documents. Those documents were part of the murdering process. So really, in a way, this would be like looking at the videos of a torturer, except that they didn't do videos, but they did much else. They took films, they took pictures. Photographic evidence is rather important as well. Exhumations could be more important if they were done professionally, which they rarely are in Ukraine. So I think awareness and you have to triage the sources all the time. All of survivors' testimony you can get hold of on particular incidents, and use that as a counterweight to what the perpetrators are telling us. Well, the Ukrainian diaspora has basically banned me from writing in the press, so no Ukrainian newspaper will allow me to say anything. No Ukrainian website will allow me to say anything. Academics in the Ukrainian studies will allow me to speak on other topics which I work on, such as sacral iconography or sacral culture in Alberta or something like that. That they'll allow me to speak in. I'm not allowed to speak on anything dealing with the Holocaust or nationalism. In Ukraine, quite different. Ukraine is, first of all, a very divided country. It's been divided. I can't say that I cooperate with the opposition, like the Party of Regions or anything like that. I've refused any cooperation with what I would call, well, pro-Russian parties. I mean, sometimes Russian think tanks approach me and ask, would you like to be able to be paid to do a blog? No. Would you like to be interviewed? No. But in Ukraine itself, I align with that sort of more liberal, more inquisitive group, which is young people mostly. So I find that the Center for Urban History in Lviv is a wonderful place to work. I have close ties with people like Vasily Rasevich, Yuri Radchenko, Marta Havrishko, Andriy Usach. I've met and there's a number of younger people working on this critical. I'm closely involved with the magazine Spilne, the Commons, where you have some critical thinkers. But I try to be on that kind of internal opposition to the Ukrainian project. There's one place in the West which actually is interested in what I have to say, and that's the community of Holocaust scholars. So I'm often involved with conferences or projects in Holocaust studies. They have no problem with what I say. In Ukraine, it's not just, it's not regional, and it's not, in the West, of course, is the most pro-Oun, pro-Upa, this kind of nationalist, ultra-nationalist view of history. But there are also many people there who think that that's problematic or wrong. So it's not limited to the Eastern Ukraine. Of the Eastern Ukrainians, the one I work with is Yuri Radchenko. He's in Kharkiv. Artem Kharchenko as well. These are people who may be in the East, but they're not what the Westerners call Skhidnyake. They speak Ukrainian. They're Ukrainian by their culture. It's just that they're critical of the narrative that is put forward by, in particular, the two presidencies of Yushchenko and Poroshenko, and by the head of the Institute of National Memory, Volodymyr Vyatrovich, or by the historian Ruslan Zabili in Lviv. You know, they occupy part of the official establishment, academic establishment in Ukraine, the pro-nationalists, and they're older. And they have an alliance basically with people left over from the old Soviet system. So I don't want to name names if that's okay. But it is age. You know, there are people who, there are the older generation of Ukrainian scholars who know Ukrainian and they know Russian and they know Polish. Maybe they know a foreign language, but rarely, rarely. These young kids, they speak English. Some of them speak German. They read different languages. Yuri Radchenko must know about seven languages by now, including Hebrew. These are people who are curious. They don't want to just cook in their own sauce. They've been abroad, you know. So like Marta Havrishko, she just got a scholarship for the Advanced Center of Holocaust Studies at the Holocaust Museum in Washington. Yuri has been there as well. They've been in America, and they've been here in Paris, the capital of the world. You know, they move around, and it gives them a total perspective. And those older generation, trained under the Soviet period, who now head up the institutes, head up the publishing programs, many of them, they feel threatened by these young people. So sometimes this takes ideological form. So combat these young people who are thinking differently, who are thinking about problems they just never even considered. You know, so I think that the age thing is important. The fact that these are young people who are exposed to different ideas. Many of them have studied in Poland. Poland has proved, at least in the past, it's proved very important in a sort of transitional. CEU in Hungary, you know, has done tremendous work. How many people have come out of there, young people, and as a result of their exposure to not only to the institution there and the kind of scholars that are working there, but also to many other young people of with similar interests. So it's a totally different game. They live quite differently. You go to Lviv, and you go to a cafe, you see young people there. All the older generation says, oh, that's because their parents are off in Italy and working, and they're just sitting there in the cafes doing nothing. Nonsense. These are just people who are interested in life. You know, so, yeah, I would say age is probably the biggest factor. And I would say if we were relying, if it was the older generation that was in favor of our views or open to the view that it is possible that Ukrainians took part in mass cleansing and killed, you know, lots of people. And who hasn't, you know, you might add to that. But that older generation, we would say, is going to pass. They won't be able to maintain their positions forever. Although, as you probably know, the head of the Ukrainian Academy of Sciences is 100 years old. I mean, that's... They will have to give up their positions at some point. Right now, they have a brain drain. All their bright people, I have educated professors from Ukraine, but they're now professors in Canada, and they're brilliant. Serhiy Yekelchik, Andriy Zarenyuk, you know, Yulia Kisla right now has two babies, but I'm sure she'll be a fine professor in Canada before long. So that's a brain drain, but there are many who are staying there, making a point of it. Yuri Radchenko, Marta Havrishko, Vasil Rasevich, Andriy Usach, and these others, they're going to stay there. They're even the younger of the young. So I think that the long-term prospects for the old views are not great. And I also, if I can be, I know we're supposed to be really quick here, but when I was back in Lviv in maybe about 2000, maybe a little earlier, some of the old people, like my relatives, some of my old people, they would go and they would gather, and they went to Lonsky prison before it was a museum or anything like that, and they commemorated the murders that occurred there by the NKVD in 1941, which I'll be talking about today. And a reporter stopped young people who were just passing by, and the young people's attitude was, oh, well, they're the old people. They're interested in this. It's important for them. It's good that they're here, but I have no actual interest in this. Well, what's happened is there's been a bit of a diffusion of a nationalist idea even among some of the youth. In fact, you also, your right radicals are all young people. So there is that, but it could be a blip.